course, not really drinking. And I said this to someone that got up, got there, and was, like, playing catch up. I was like, oh, no one's drinking. I don't want to play catch up. Like, welcome to season 2, episode 3.
14.
Sure. Episode 14 of What the Batch. I had a bunch of different ways I wanted to start this week's episode. Like, I was pretty excited. I was going to, like, propose a question to you, and I thought, like, oh, this would be a fun jumping off point, and I can, like, moderate for once, as opposed to just, like, pontificate. But then...
What were you going to moderate?
Well, I was going to, like, moderate in so much as, like, I was going to ask questions to you, and not just, like, tell things that happened. And we may get to that portion of this, but I can't not start with all things Corinne. I didn't want to talk about it. And I thought maybe we could just sort of glaze over it and keep moving. But I don't really think that is a valuable or not valuable. I don't think that's the correct choice given the way that the show chose to handle it.
Which I'm sure is great.
Well, I mean, you managed to walk in and out as it was happening, so you saw enough of it to realize that the framing of how it was edited, at the very least, was very much about DeMario and yes. less about Corinne. Now, here's the problem.
Which is gross.
There's so many issues with this. First and foremost, I bitched last week about this all being pre-taped and it being done on the exact same day that the DeMario one was done.
Right, that was the, like... 7 hour.
Yeah, they filmed for 7 hours.
Which I can't even imagine.
But when you put that in the context of what was shown tonight, it becomes even more problematic. And then when you frame it additionally with Chris Harrison being like, this is the first time Corinne's ever spoken about this, and they cut themselves off at the knees by having her on Good Morning America this morning.
That kind of spoils your exclusive.
Yeah, they gave, like, ABC gave away its own exclusive to itself, but, like, made Tonight with Chris obsolete. And the interview she did on GMA was inherently more substantive because it was actual reporters and not Chris Harrison asking questions.
The hard questions. The real questions.
I was expecting him to lob softballs. I thought, okay, maybe what we're going to get here is GMA will ask the hard questions. They will get the headlines. They will drive the viewership up. And Chris will ask the softballs, and then everyone will go home feeling good about themselves because nothing bad happened in Paradise. And that's not really what we got. Instead, we got GMA having like an actual emotional sit-down with her this morning in which they kind of delved into the nature of what she thinks happened and what she's saying now, which she had not set up until this point because she'd stayed pretty much radio silent. Mm-hmm. Is that she was on a new medication that she had only started taking after Nick's season and had never drank heavily on and didn't realize that she wasn't supposed to drink heavily on and thus blacked out and doesn't remember almost anything that happened the first night that she was there, but watched the video, has seen the tape, and recognizes that she seems completely lucid. And there would have been no way for anyone there to know that she wasn't because she didn't tell them that she was on this medication.
Oh, wow. That's scary.
Now, I'm of two minds about this. The first is it feels like a very weird thing to sit on for as many months or weeks as she did, if that's what this was about. And for her to have lawyered up with Marty Singer, like, if she didn't remember that whole night, I feel like if you wake up on day two and you don't remember any of night one and most of the afternoon, there's questions that need to be asked immediately. And she didn't ring the bell. We got all the way to day three before anyone shut production down, and it was a producer who wasn't on set. So where was, for 36 hours, her genuine concern at the fact that she lost a whole night of her life? Because I've made a similar mistake to what she's now saying happened with her. I read the side of a cold medication box that said, don't take this with alcohol.
Oh, yeah, don't drink and do cold medication. It's bad. It's really bad. I had a dude try and throw himself out of a limo once.
Yeah, and look, you live and you learn. And I read it and thought, okay, this is a suggestion more than it's a mandate.
Incorrect.
But the night also got away from me, not dissimilar from how it got away from her, where I thought, okay, I can have one drink on cold medication and that's fine. But it's a slippery slope because you have one drink on cold medication, then you're feeling really good because those two things really shouldn't be mixed with one another. Then you have a second drink, then all of a sudden you've blacked out and you're taking more cold medication. So it's a vicious circle, you know? And I came to at 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, thankfully in our apartment, but having no idea how I got here. So I get it. And I totally buy if that's what happened to her. I still feel like there is a problem with the narrative in so much as I woke up the next day and really had to sit back and evaluate the mistakes that I had made and start to make phone calls to like potentially people that I had upset or infuriated with the way that I acted the night before. And I'm not on a reality television show, you know, and I knew full well that I hadn't done anything physical with anyone. So it was more about like, hey, how big of an asshole was I? And like, how mean were the things that I said? Because I tend to like spout off at the mouth when I'm not like double dipping in cold medication and booze. So for her to know, and this is a thing, like whether she remembered it or not, everyone else in the house is like, hey, you know, DeMario ate you out by the side of the pool and like you did this and you did that and you don't remember that. That should raise a lot of red flags. And if you're Chris Harrison, I feel like it's your job to ask those questions. Now, you can ask them in respectful ways that also honor the idea that this is a family show. Like, you're not going to say, hey, so you didn't think it was weird that you don't remember getting eaten out? Because it's ABC at 9:30 at night. And that's cool. That's, you know, like, fine. But he doesn't even ask her those questions. He doesn't ask her anything about that. It goes right from, oh, okay, you were on, you know, medication and booze. You didn't know this. Why didn't you know this? You probably should have known this. To, do you know how DeMario feels about this?
And I care how DeMario feels about this.
I do, but I do in so much as if the two of them are in the same building at the same time and you're filming these interviews back to back, put them on the couch together.
Oh, no, don't do that.
I mean, that...
No, absolutely don't do that.
I think you need to treat this like... If they're going to sit there and show clips of his interview, which we watched last week, to her, for her to respond to, then... And we're saying full well. She says tonight, when Chris asks her, I don't hold any grudges against DeMario. I don't think DeMario did anything wrong. So if that's where we're coming down here, if we're coming down, I don't think DeMario did anything wrong. I think DeMario kind of got taken advantage of by both this show and the media, which is what Corinne is, you know, that's the party line now. And DeMario has reached out to her and said, like, hey, she, even when she's asked, like, oh, did you get in touch with DeMario? She said, no, because honestly, I was kind of nervous of that he would be mad at me. So if that's where we're at, right, if that's where these two people are at, I would rather you sit the two of them down. Or at the very least, if you don't want to put them, like, on the same couch with one another, like, splitting it up across the weeks and making it seem like it was taped vastly wide apart from one another.
Yeah,
like,
it's just dumb and disingenuous. But
it's disingenuous, and it also doesn't get to the heart of anything. Like, we've spent so much of this season in the mud, just kind of retreading this really unpleasant story that was blown wildly out of proportion, with no resolution, because I don't feel like I got any resolution tonight. And maybe there's a bigger statement to be made here, which is that Corinne will probably never get the resolution that she wants, and DeMario will probably never get the resolution that he wants.
You're also, even though this has been done as something for the consumption of people, none of us are owed resolution. Especially if Corinne and DeMario aren't going to get it, who are the people who are actually in it. But, this is why this is gross, though.
But you
can't create the narrative, like a satisfying narrative, out of somebody's trauma and assault. Like,
and that's the thing where, like, again, I'm reticent to identify this as assault. And
well, here's the thing: if what you say is true, and Corinne says she doesn't remember anything, and things did happen, that's still assault. Like, just because you didn't know that she was not in her right mind doesn't necessarily change it, which is not to say that I'm advocating for DeMario to get the book thrown at him, because this is a, you know, delicate situation and Corinne, you know, has her whole thing, but This is why you shouldn't be doing this for the consumption of other people.
Which is fine then. Like that, if that's what.
Well, I also can't imagine that they didn't float the idea to both of them. What if we sat you both down on the couch and they said no? Or one of them said no.
Here's the cynic in me, right? They're allegedly taping something this Thursday.
Which maybe they put them on the couch and sit them yes. together. Which right? is, this is all just so gross.
Which if that ends up happening, if the live, which by the way, they're going to call it a live after mm-hmm. show, but it tapes Thursday and the show has two more weeks. Yeah, so okay. live.
It's real live.
if the live after show has the two of them on a couch together for the first time, then we've dragged this out so far beyond what's acceptable. And I get that, like, the two of them will probably never get the resolution, you know, so we probably shouldn't. But I do feel like there's merit to getting closer to that, or at least saying these two people were victims of the system. The show needs to take responsibility for itself in a way that I don't think it's willing to.
Oh, no, not in a million years.
Right? Like, if DeMario's not at fault and Corinne's not at fault, then the show, to some degree, is at fault. Because this is not a no-fault accident. And if they didn't know, if she was really on this medication, right? And everything everything was cagey and there was no follow-up question. So the reporter in me, I don't want to sound like I'm doubting her story or calling her story or her narrative into question, but there's the skeptic in me or the reporter in me that's like, we have no facts. It's all hearsay from him and hearsay from her. And we've done a litany of interviews now that really haven't gotten to the bottom of anything. But if we're going to say that she's telling the truth and she was on this medication.
Sure. And regardless, I think we can all assume / agree that she doesn't remember the night. And even if the medication thing doesn't ring true, you still have to acknowledge her protecting herself from a society that will just slut shame her and be like, you brought this upon yourself and DeMario for being drunk. So it's a no-win situation for her.
I'm going to say this and you're going to chastise me, and that's fine.
Then don't say it. Maybe can reconsider.
I think part of what makes me very skeptical of the entire narrative that's being painted here, both from her, from him, and from the show, is the knowledge that she went on the show with a boyfriend and came off the show still dating that boyfriend. And so, like, there's people that went onto the show, like Alexis, who went onto the show with a boyfriend. It was never acknowledged. She made no effort to really date anybody on the show. And the implicit agreement there is she just wants exposure and she'll give us good, like, ITMs. Okay? But Corinne comes on, and the first thing that she says to Chris Harrison is, like, I thought you had a boyfriend. She goes, no, I don't have a boyfriend. And walks off the show, and the boyfriend's like, yeah, we were together the whole time. Like, I knew she was never going to do anything on the show, so clearly if anything happened, it was pushed on her by the producers. That's a part of this story that hasn't been addressed really beyond that. Like, it hasn't been addressed by ABC. It hasn't been addressed, you know, at Good Morning America or with Chris Harrison. But I think it's an important part of the narrative because it's a seam that when you pull that seam, everything starts to, like, look a little bit more conspicuous and a little bit more crafted in terms of everyone's covering their bases. Like, Corinne's trying to save face. DeMario's trying to save face. ABC's trying to save face. Like, the franchise itself is trying to save face.
Yeah, but this has been my entire thing of why I don't believe anything that the franchise says, because of course the franchise is trying to save face, and if you have a whole bunch of people who rely on the franchise for their living, that's a hard position to be in, whether you want to, like, raise a stink versus keep your job or, you know, follower generating machine going. Like, everyone has an investment here and has a monetary reason to, you know, not really rock the boat too much.
Yeah, but that's why, like, I think, so to circle back, because I walked away from it, I think the culpability here on...
I think culpability is 100% with the show.
Well, you've produced things. I've produced things. I mean, I worked in reality television for a little bit. But, like, I don't understand for the life of me how contestants brought medication to Paradise and the producers didn't know what they had in their bags. Like, that right. seems like such a legal liability and an insurance nightmare that this is, again, this is where I go, okay, so she had this medication, but I'm skeptical that she, how did she have this medication and producers didn't know that she had this medication? And then it becomes like, well, did she really have the medication? There's a lot of questions that get arised from the narrative that we're now asked to believe here.
Right, though I was in here when she was talking about that, and honestly what it sounded like she was describing, because I think she said that it was a medication that takes a bit of time to build up in your system. That sounds like an SSRI. That sounds like something that you take for depression or your own mental health. And yeah, there's a lot of people are embarrassed to be on those in the first place. They don't ask the questions that they should about them.
But these contestants have to pass a psych eval, right? So if we're saying it's an SSRI, right? We're saying it's depression medication. Again, to circle back here, there is more like nefarious and weird question, like weird things going on, because if Corinne was that depressed that she had to go on this medication, then in theory, without that medication, she would have failed the psych eval that allowed her to be on the show.
True. I mean, I don't know. Do you know what the psych evaluation requirements, what they're looking for?
I have been told it's one of the most intensive evaluations in reality television. I don't know exactly what the questions are, but if it's an intensive, right? And presumably, even if she's like, it's like, where are you going to hide the medication? So that's the other thing, right? Like, if she didn't put it on the paperwork, okay, and didn't report it, when they came back from their hiatus, apparently all of their bags were raided. And producers and production assistants went through all of their bags. That feels like something that should have happened long before the shutdown. Like,
I mean, probably.
Because, again, for insurance purposes, we're talking about maybe depression medication, maybe, you know, an antipsychotic, maybe something that is a... the way she described it with, like, having to do it after next season, it could even be, you know, a PTSD drug. But, like... I'm sure there are people that rolled up to Paradise with, like, cocaine or, like, Molly or, like, party drugs, right? But those are all insurance and liability nightmares, too, that, like, you gotta be raiding the bags to make sure that that's not happening. And if you're not, then you're inviting these type of behaviors and you're inviting, like, this type of chaos and anarchy on your set.
Well, this also just goes back to why I think the show is ultimately the one that's culpable for everything.
But that's what makes the entire last half an hour of tonight so, like, and last week... And most of the way that this season in general has been framed, so kind of gross. And, like, I'm a staunch supporter of the show, and I was very glad that Paradise was coming back. It's not a surprise to anyone that listens to this. But I think if you're going to eventize trauma the way that they have...
Just don't do it.
Well, A, don't do it. But B, like, if you're gonna do it, if that's the decision that you make, like... That's going to be our framing mechanism for this season. Then at the end of it, you need to sit down and really own the mistakes that you've made. Like, I would rather have a one-on-one with Chris Harrison and the executive producer of the show at this point than I would with Corinne or DeMario. And we'll never get that because the show's not willing to have that degree of transparency.
Well, no, but then it would also require somebody to own up their mistakes, which would open them up to being sued.
I was almost waiting for them to drag the female producer who reported this incident in the first place and make her sit there in front of a camera and apologize.
Oh no, they're done with her.
I mean, she was fired, and they released her name to the public. But
oh, cool, revenge.
This show has a history of like when producers no longer work for the show, they're like dead to the show. Because there was a producer who had sex with a contestant. No, she didn't have sex with a contestant. She
unreeled it.
She forced herself on a contestant.
Is that what happened or is that what they said?
No, like that's what he said. Basically, what he's gone on to say is that he told her he wasn't interested and that he was there to compete on the show. And she told him that she was in love with him. And he was like, okay, thank you. And then she told him that he was going to be kicked off the show if he didn't make out with her. And so then he did. And then she threatened to tell her husband about it and tried to blackmail
him. Wait, this story just took, like, an incredible turn.
And he was like, it got to a place where I didn't really know what to do. And then he eventually, I guess, told other producers on the show, and she got fired. And then he got excommunicated from the franchise because they were mad at him for having ever indulged her. So they're like,
that all sounds heinous.
Yes. I mean, it sounds like an Unreal plot.
I feel like Unreal touched on that.
So they dragged her at the same time. They're like, here's her name. And she's a crazy person. And that's way, you know, more zany and potentially unhinged than like this girl who was like, oh, I think there might be, a mishandling of procedure. So I'm going to report it to our parent company. And they're like, okay, great. Well, we're going to drag you now through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked enough about this. I don't want to talk anymore about Corinne. Let's talk about, like, the actual things that the show's supposed to be. Because finally this week, for the first time, I think,
it felt like paradise.
Not in that it was fun, but, like, it was dramatic and soapy. I'm like, oh, okay, great. We're finally, things are finally happening on paradise.
I've been tuning in.
Like, stuff was actually going down. Not just, like, oh, let's frolic around on the beach. And, oh, someone new showed up? Okay, like, let's bro time, and no one's actually interested in dating any of the women here. This week, people were, like, interested in vaguely dating, or two-timing. But things were happening.
But did Jorge's... I keep wanting to call Torgays.
Yeah.
Which would be amazing.
That's what it is. It's Jorge Sorgays.
So Jorge just run around with a bunch of gays touring around? Because that would be incredible, and that's what I think of.
I think they just... Because Torgays is in Spanish. It's supposed to be like tours. So Jorge's tours. It's not...
Is Torgay Spanish for tours?
Yeah, that's what the show would have you believe. I haven't actually put it through a Google Translator, but...
For some reason, it's not right.
That's what they would have you believe. Jorge made one brief appearance this week.
My idea, so much better.
It was a very weird appearance. It was Jorge wearing a Jorge mask in the crowd of a wrestling match.
Is this like when Bryan Cranston ran around Comic-Con wearing a Walter White mask?
I guess. But like, this mask was just like somebody printed out a photo of Jorge and then cut the eyes out.
Oh, the little wraparound mask?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't... They never...
This is very disturbing.
They just cut to the one frame of it and they never address it.
They never explain it? They were just like, here's Jorge in the background. Are you sure it was Jorge, though?
Positive. Because, like, there's, like, the wink and nudge from Jorge that it's Jorge. Just like last week when he, like... wouldn't leave the date, and then showed, like, ran around behind them and double, like, thumbed up.
Oh, God. Is that the one where he was...
He took them to where he was conceived. Yeah. Oh,
the show.
I'm
gonna go back and watch a zoo.
Now I can ask you the question that I originally wanted to lead this entire podcast off with, so I'm excited.
If the question is today's podcast brought to us by Apothic Wine and a weed delivery service called Ganja Runner, the answer is yes.
See, this is good. We are getting to a place again where I'm still looking for sponsors podcast.
I decided to add my own flair to that.
If either of those companies want to sponsor this podcast, I am ready.
Look, especially if Apothic wants to give me some free, like, crates, because I think I've spent so much money in their brand.
Is it whatthebatch@gmail.com?
Yes.
whatthebatch@gmail.com.
Come on, Apothic Wines.
Email, I will actually begin checking this Gmail account now. Please, please email me.
It's on my phone. Nobody's emailed us.
Okay. Well, this could be the day that everything turns around. No, my question that I was going to ask you is, how romantic, on a scale of 1 to 10, would you find it if a gentleman caller...
Oh, no. Well, if he calls himself a gentleman caller, we're already out.
Okay. How romantic, on a scale of 1 to 10, if a social media influencer brought you to a hot tub and proceeded to throw 28 glow sticks that he'd previously cracked into the hot tub. And it's dark out. And then he's like, look at the beautiful lights in the hot tub now.
Oh, absolutely fucking not, because that's toxic. Yeah. Also, you know how I feel about hot tubs.
Yes. Well, that's why I was excited to lead with this question.
I mean, at the very least, it probably toxified and killed all of the gross germs. But, like, glow sticks are really highly toxic. If you break one, you're supposed to wash your hand immediately and potentially call poison control. So,
well, when I say, no. Okay, when I say break, I mean, like, you know, when you snap, so they actually light up. Not like he, like, cut them or, like, broke them.
Oh,
so
I thought leaking. You meant, like, the fluid came
no,
out.
No.
Oh, you mean just, but why? Why? Because hot tubs have lights, interior lights, so why wouldn't you just turn those on?
They don't glow in multiple colors, though.
I'm pretty sure you can shell out for that feature.
In Paradise, they can't afford things like that, you know?
Oh, that's true. We're going with tour gays. No, because I would be really worried that the heat of the hot tub was going to eat through the glow stick, and it's stupid.
100%. No, this...
Also, if you want to get frisky in the hot tub, people can now see you.
Yes.
So, no.
Well, it's Paradise, so everyone gets frisky everywhere and everyone can see them. That's the least of the issues.
Well, you at least make an effort.
I am pro hot tub, but negative on sex in the hot tub.
Yeah, no, don't do that. For a lot of reasons.
Yeah, but... So a lot of dumb things happened this week on Paradise.
What? No.
But, like, great dumb things. But none of them was greater or dumber than Robbie's genius idea. And I say genius because he really thought he had nailed it.
Wait, which one was Robbie?
Human Ken Doll.
Human Ken Doll fake threesome. Or love triangle.
He was vague. Yeah, he was trapped in the fake love triangle that wasn't a triangle because Raven had no interest in him.
Right.
And he's since moved on to Amanda because he knows if one contestant on the show has bad taste in men, it's Amanda Stanton.
He's not the one who was friends with her abusive ex, right?
Yes, you know, he is. Fuck. Amanda, to her credit, has largely curbed Robbie and continues to do so through much of this episode as he waddles towards romantic gestures that he's very convinced are spectacular and I'm very convinced are heinous.
Is Robbie... Did he have girlfriends? Did he peak in, like, middle school? What's going on there?
He finished second on JoJo's season, so...
Was JoJo the one that you opted not to go on?
JoJo was the one that I had no interest in really trying to compete for JoJo's affections. I knew I'd... Well, one, I stood no chance. And then two, I just was kind of very let down because I was so...
Caitlin?
Kayla. Dead set on Kayla.
Oh, I was so close.
Who still, if like, of all the guests I want for this podcast, number one. So, Kayla.
What is it?
What the batch
circle
at,
it?
Whatthebatch@gmail.com. Robbie was awkward on that season, though. It's not to say that he wasn't awkward, but wow, has he been really, really just uncomfortably odd.
Is he trying to do a bit?
It might be editing, because we got a glimpse of him talking to Christina in the second episode this week, where he seemed very normal and sort of comforting. But everything that's for his particular storyline is... The glow sticks in the pool thing comes off like a 14-year-old had this really dope idea and only and only had access to his parents' backyard to come up with a date. The subsequent reaction from Amanda is like, oh, okay, thanks.
For the glow sticks?
Yeah. She doesn't want to get in the hot tub, though. She's just like, can I go back to playing Scattergories with the rest of this cast now? And he's like, yeah, just as long as you know that, like, I did this for you.
Okay. Wait, he's not the one who did the watermelon cake, is he?
No, that was Dean.
Deanie baby.
throughout the rest of the three or so hours that of like actual beach content this week, Robbie just continues to persist as Amanda tells us in ITMs that she's not really interested in him.
Ew.
She's like, yeah, you know, he keeps trying and I'm not really into it, but he's so nice and I don't know how to be mean to him and just say like, no, stop. So I'm kind of just letting it happen, but not really encouraging it all. And my hope is that eventually he'll realize and just kind of give up.
I'm sure that worked out real well for her.
Well, by the end of last night's episode, she gave in and just kissed him. And then was like, well, you know, he tried so hard that I felt like I had to kiss him because he was just putting all this work in and he really wanted to kiss me. And it was nice. And I'm sitting there like, not once in my whole life has that ever worked for me. Like, maybe paradise is where I belong, where if you just try hard enough and refuse to give up, you can be Evan and end up married, or you can be Robbie and come up with stupid ideas like glow sticks in the pool and still get a kiss and a rose out of it, you know?
This is such a bad message to be sending people. Persistence is not a good thing.
Yeah.
At least not in this context. Like, if somebody tells you no, please gracefully accept it and move on with your life.
Well, but this is the thing. Amanda doesn't really ever say no. It's just like, he goes to kiss her and she gives him a cheek. But then she's like, let's keep hanging out. And he goes to kiss her and she's like, I'm not ready to be kissed yet. And he's like, okay. She's like, let's just keep hanging out. And I was watching it like, okay, she's giving him just enough rope to hang himself so that she gets her rose this week. Because the guys have the roses and she doesn't want to go home. And then she's going to be like, okay, you can go now. Goodbye. But it doesn't come off like that.
What I think is going on here is the reason like all dudes seem to complain about women not ever just saying no is we're conditioned not to say no because there are those dudes out there who don't accept no. And you always try and mitigate your brush off and make it not seem like a brush off or that you're declining because your life could actually be in danger for declining. And it's not something, it's like, it's not going to happen on the show, but it's not a habit that you can really easily break.
I don't even know that that's what it is with her in particular. Like, if this is the case study, I just think it's that Amanda, and this is kind of what happened last year too with Josh, right? You know, I think she just at a certain point goes, well, this is fine. Like, I don't really enjoy it, but I don't hate it. And it's nice to have someone showing me attention. So I guess I'll make out with you. Like, that just seems to be her general approach to dating.
Yeah, but if she's saying in her too much informations, you know, she wants
but then
to say no.
But then after they kissed, she was like, yeah, it was fine. Like, he seems so, like, into it that, like, it kind of made me into it.
What?
So
I need more wine.
And then they briefly brought her out to talk to Chris Harrison at the fake live after thing. And he asked her how the kiss was, and she's like, oh, he's a very good kisser. So there's an implicit encouragement. It's weird. It's a push and pull. Like, she's discouraging him in certain ways, and
I wouldn't say that that's encouragement. Like, somebody can be a good kisser, and you not want to kiss them all the time. That's reading into it.
Well, I mean, now I'm just speaking from personal experience, which is that, like, if they were a good kisser, I'd be, like, down to kiss them all the time. So that's just me putting my reading on it. But, sure.
You've never platonically made out with somebody who's a really good kisser?
No, I have not done that.
Oh, I've done that before.
Absolutely not.
What vastly different life experiences.
Because here's the thing. If it had started as a platonic makeout, then I probably would have been like, wow, that was a really great makeout. Can we, like, do it again, but, like, not platonically? Or can we, like, try to see if this can blossom into something else? I think the only, like, platonic makeout that I've ever really had, I was, like, super drunk and then didn't really remember the next day. Like, only vaguely remembered it happening. And they were like, yeah, you were really great. Like, I used you to make somebody else jealous. And I was like, okay, dope. I'm, like, a great friend. Like, I couldn't tell you whether that was a great makeout or not. Like, I just know that I served my purpose in that equation because I was there for her.
But you're saying that if that happened and you were like, oh, great kisser, you would then immediately transition into...
I would think about it. I would think about it. I don't...
Oh, sure. No one's saying that you haven't thought about it.
I think in this particular instance, like, the one case... you know, that I have, it was more like I knew what my role there was, which was just to make somebody else jealous, so... Yeah.
But even that, like, really good kisser, still just here to make someone jealous.
Yeah. I guess it would just depend on how good it was, and I don't remember, so I can't really comment on that. Yeah. That's a recurring theme.
Tragedy of your life.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme of me just, like, not remembering various things. Which is ironic, given this is a recap, and it's all about me remembering things since I stopped taking notes. So that's the Robbie and Amanda thing. You know, Robbie gives his rose to her, and she's around for another week, and he's around for another week, and love is in the air for the two of them. Or mm-hmm. maybe
you're
not.
Really selling this on.
The main story this week, though, was something that had been promoted for much of the season, which was Jasmine kind of being like, you want good TV, ABC, I'll give you good TV.
Oh, is she the one who's going to storm down the beach?
Beach, yes.
Okay.
She's the self-proclaimed Queen of Paradise.
I thought that was Raven.
No, Raven's the actual Queen of Paradise.
Oh, not the self-proclaimed. No. Everyone else has proclaimed.
Yes. Raven's proclaimed by all of the producers and the cast members who understand that
and
she...
the editing?
Yes, and the editing. Jasmine is the girl who says, hey, just so you know, I'm the Queen of Paradise.
Okay.
When new girls walk in. Because Jasmine's kind of a mean girl, too. And that's really relevant to, like, why... Or what... overtook the vast majority of the 2 hours on night one?
Was Jasmine?
It was the Jasmine story. It was Jasmine and Matt, and then Kristen, who spells her name... She's new to the Paradise. She spells her name C-H-R-I-S...
Nope, stop, I'm out.
T-E-N.
Nope. Mm-mm.
That is potentially the most notable thing that she contributed to Nick's season.
Was her name?
Yes. And that she was the token virgin.
Oh. Is this a thing now?
It's always a thing. Like, it's been a thing for seasons. It started with a girl just genuinely being like, hey, I'm a virgin. And, like, they were like, okay, dope, that's cool. And then they were like, oh... other girls notice, like, I have a better chance of getting on this show.
If I'm a virgin,
because they want at least one. So I honestly believe that's the only reason that Kristen got on next season. And she really didn't do anything. Like, the girl that Nick slept with before they started filming, whose name I don't remember now, like, confided in her, and Kristen immediately told everyone, like, oh, Nick slept with this girl before filming. And then they both went home.
Okay.
She shows up.
I'm just still pondering a world where you actually believe virginity is a legitimate thing.
Well, she says she uses it like a chess piece. She tells...
Oh, great. That's super healthy. She would relationship 10 out of 10.
Yeah. She tells one of the guys this week... And that's the thing, right? There have been virgins on the show, like Ashley I, who was in last season of Paradise.
Right,
season
but
before.
She's just a virgin because she hasn't found somebody to do, which is... the literal definition of virginity, which should be you just haven't done this yet, as opposed to, like, it's a thing, a quantifiable thing that affects you in some way.
It's funny, because, like, I never felt like Ashley commodified it.
Right.
She was smart enough to know that it would get her on the show, but then she didn't even talk about it when she was on the show until producers started to be like, hey, tell us about, like, all the guys you've been with in these ITMs. And then she was like, what guys? I've never been with guys. And they're like, you haven't been with guys before. And she's like, no, I've never had sex. I told you guys that. And then, like... That's when
they made it a thing.
Yeah. And then when she realized, like, okay, well, this is what my, you know, narrative is going to be on Paradise, she owned that and she's owned it off of the show, and she's made a brand out of it, and I respect her for that, because ultimately, like, the reason that she still is a virgin is simply, like, she hasn't found anyone that she wants to date or that she's in love with yep. who also wants to do that with her. So, cool. The way Kristen describes it is very different. She's talking to one of the guys, and she's like, it's really benefited me. I've never really found somebody that I think deserves it, and I like to use it like a chess piece.
Oh, gross. Like, no, that's a huge warning flag.
And I'm sitting there being like, run, all of you. Just, like, run. But Matt just kind of wants to run away from Jasmine. That's where he's at. I think he sees the warning flags, and he runs right past them because he doesn't believe in that old saying that the evil you know is better than the evil you don't.
Oh, buddy. Buddy.
So Jasmine tells Kristen, don't go on a date with Matt. I'm with him. And all the other girls tell her, like, hey, you know, Benzie's still available. Proverbially available because no one wants him. And serial killer Jack Stone.
Oh, we turned from future porn star to serial killer Jack Stone.
That's how they've started to refer to him within the show itself.
Wait, like, really?
Yes.
Any particular reason why?
They think he looks like a serial killer.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with them, but okay.
Serial killer Jack Stone became available within the context of the show because Alexis tried to put a dead crab in his mouth while he had a blindfold on. This is a real thing that happened.
Are they crossing over with Fear Factor? Also, where did this dead crab come from?
She found it on the beach.
Absolutely not. Why would you do that? What a terrible... Oh, people.
It's a game that Raven
and... Is she the mean girl?
No, she's the fantastic Jersey girl who had a boyfriend. And like I said, she knew what her role was, which is that she was never really going to date anybody. Alexis and Raven apparently play this game with some frequency.
Put a dead crab in someone's mouth?
No, it's... Alexis calls it guess the taste or something like that, and Raven calls it what you do with that mouth there.
What? What?
It's pretty
not prepared.
It's pretty wonderful to hear the two of them describe this, but the game begins innocent enough, which is we're going to blindfold Jack Stone.
Innocent.
And we're going to put like a papaya in his mouth, and he has to guess like what it is, and he's like, papaya. And then it's like, we're going to put a jalapeno pepper in his mouth. And he has to guess what it is. And he's like, a jalapeno pepper. And we're going to put a gummy bear slathered in Tabasco sauce. That's kind of gross. But you're like, okay, I get it. It has to build, right? It's got to build. And then Alexis is like, here's this dead crab that I found on the beach. And it's been, like, rotting in the sun.
No. Why would you do that? You're going to give somebody something bad.
And before she can ever put it in his mouth, like, he can just smell it coming towards him and is like, no.
Oh.
At this point, the show kind of tells you he's not going to give Alexis his rose because he's mad at her. And it's like, no, he's not going to give Alexis his rose because Alexis has a boyfriend at home and he wants to, like, fuck somebody. Like, that's... But they don't want to reveal that element of...
But also... Like, he's totally justified in not keeping that person around, because, ew.
Yeah. It's a loss for the show, because Alexis is the source of comedic relief. Like, she's their comic foil for all the nonsense that's happening.
Okay.
Including, like, this game is, like, I would be really pissed if it was me, like, if I was Jack. But everyone else there is loving it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they're like, sure, let's haze serial killer Jack Stone. To tie this back, though, all of the girls are like, go out with Jack or go out with Ben. And Kristen's like, this is a hard choice.
Jack or Ben.
I don't know. And Matt swoops in like a bald eagle.
Caw-caw, motherfuckers.
And says, hey, I know Jasmine told you that we're together. But we're not that together.
We're negotiably together.
So I'll go on the date with you. Thus begins the complete and total meltdown of self-appointed Paradise Queen.
Oh, no.
Jasmine. She becomes the girl who says things like, no, this doesn't bother me. Why would you think this bothers me? It doesn't bother me at all. Of course it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I can tell.
Matt goes, okay, great, well, I'm gonna go on the date then. And she's like, yeah, go on the date. Have fun with her. You know, have a great time. I hope you have a great time. I think, she, you know, like, of course she's going to get your rose. I'm not going to get your rose. Have a great time on the date. Go on the date. There is a very long ITM in which she
unravels. Yeah.
And she starts to be like, of course he's never going to go for her. She can't have sex with him like the way that I can have sex with him. She can't do that for him. And she can't tickle his pickle.
I would just like to point out that no one can have sex with another person the way that you can. Just everyone listening out there. All none of you.
Yes. No. Don't be negative. Don't be every big fan that we have, every super fan that we have, I believe in your ability to have sex.
But specifically in the way that you have sex and that no one else can replicate. Yes.
Even if it's bad, it's unique to you.
Nope, you are uniquely bad and you are uniquely good and you are sometimes uniquely mediocre.
This has become a really uncomfortable PSA for me. This is not where I wanted to go with this. So she spends the entire rest of the day like stalking the beach like a hyena. Waiting for them to come back from their fake date.
Do hyenas regularly stalk beaches?
I mean, she's cackling in the way that a hyena does.
What? And why is she cackling?
Because...
Is she, like, plotting her evil revenge?
Yes,
she Whoopi Goldberg?
She begins walking around and telling the other contestants, as soon as Matt gets back, I'm going to mount him and make out with him and, like, mark my territory and let Kristen know that even if they went on this date... Like, it doesn't mean anything because he's my man.
What a terrible fucking idea.
And there's no way that she is going to make out with him on the date because there's no way Matt would make out with her. And they, like, cut this opposite him.
To him making out with her.
In the ocean. Yeah, sure. Of course.
Are they doing the from eternity?
Yeah.
Like, ocean coming up around you?
No, they're in the ocean. She's, like, mounting him in the ocean and they're making out.
Wait. The girl. The other
Kristen,
girl.
Yeah. Their date, by the way, is bathing suit shopping.
Okay. Moving on.
Because that's what the budget for the show is.
I would be so angry if that was my date.
It's 12 bathing suits at a Mexican retail outlet.
No, you, mm-mm. I'll take those bathing suits and wrap them around your neck. Like, no.
They come back, and I've never found Dean more relatable.
Oh, boy.
Because Dean, like me, knows there's going to be fireworks. So he plants himself directly behind Jasmine.
Does he have popcorn?
And waits for her to jump on Matt. And then supports Matt's back with his hand so that Matt doesn't fall over.
But no, that's a really good wingmanning.
While he stares at it with absolute glee as, like, Jasmine tries to eat his face.
Can I just say that if I were in Paradise, this would totally be the role I'm playing?
I mean, like, that's the Dean that people fell in love with. There's a lot of things that Dean does in this episode that's not the Dean people fell in love with, but I was like, oh, there he is.
A brief shining moment.
At a certain point, what is, like, fun mocking of Kristen becomes bullying.
Aww.
There's a lot to cut. Like, the thing is, there's so much that goes on with this story because the whole running across the beach and being like, you want good TV, you want good TV, actually doesn't end up materializing into much of anything.
That
she
seems
just,
to be, like, the theme of the show.
She just finds Kristen, like, brushing her teeth. And, like, Kristen can't even fight back because she got a mouthful of toothpaste, which she swallows some of.
No.
And, like, rebounds real fast. Like, she swallows it, and it doesn't even seem to bother her. I'm like,
ew.
I snort a little bit of toothpaste every once in a while, and I'm like, it burns. She's just
so gross now.
Yeah, she's just knocking it back. And then the tension sort of is diffused, but then Jasmine sees Matt and Kristen making out, and then the tension is reignited. And while all of this is happening, fantastic comedic relief, Alexis, explains to us in the ITM that none of the girls like Kristen.
Oh, okay.
And they haven't liked her for some time. And it's not because...
How long has Kristen been around?
Well, they all were on Nick's season. All these girls, except for Amanda. So they've known each other now for over a year. She tells a very specific story, though, which is a wonderful anecdote and speaks to how funny Alexis can be and why the show will be lackluster without her for however many hours until the twins show up to, like, ignite false conflict. Because that's why they're there. But they were going to Bungalow,
bungalow
in Santa Monica. This is my favorite part.
How fucking random.
This is my favorite part of the story as someone that like frequents bungalow.
Yeah.
Wells has never been to bungalow. So as Alexis is telling him,
a bartender in this? I mean,
well, he's a DJ Nashville. Yeah.
Okay.
As Alexis is telling him this story, he's like, okay, so like the club. And like bungalow is not a club. For those of you who haven't been, it's like a very bougie, off the beach, former house turned like bar.
It's a bungalow.
Yes.
Like it is named that for a reason.
But they went to a restaurant. Now I have my own hypothesis here, which I believe the incident that Alexis is talking about is actually there after the final rose, because I got a phone call telling me like all the girls from Nick Season are at Bungalow, and it was the same night they taped their After the Final Rose thing, or Women Tell All rather. But they went to a restaurant and Kristen ordered scallops, and she didn't finish all the scallops, so she took the scallops to go.
Okay.
And she put the scallops in her purse in a hot car.
Oh, no. No, you mean, it's if you make taking scallops in the first place, it's kind of like asking for your sushi to go?
Yes.
But don't, you don't...
So now there are 8 women packed into a hot car.
Oh, no.
Driving to Bungalow. And Kristen decides that she's actually kind of hungry again.
Oh, no.
So she takes the scallops out of her purse. And then she starts to eat these scallops in the car with 7 other women and a driver.
Honey, no.
And then Alexis is like, I must have said something funny because I often say funny things. And she took her scallop fingers and ran them down the side of my dress and was like, oh, you're so funny, you're so funny. She's like, so I roll up to Bungalow and I smell like dead fish now and none of the guys wanted to talk to me. As a result of this, all of the girls refer to her as scallop fingers. She does not know that they call her this.
Oh, now I'm imagining salad fingers from the scallops.
But not to let this joke die, they also chiron her, Kristen, aka scallop fingers, for the rest of the episode after that story is told. She doesn't.
Does she know about the story?
She apparently will find out at some point next week. She doesn't know that they've all trash-talked her behind her back, but it's clear to her that these girls don't really like her.
Right, and that they have some sort of inside joke, because that's hard to cover up.
But the best part is that Amanda, having not come from Nick's season and having never met Kristen, didn't know about this story until Alexis told Wells and she was sitting there.
Okay.
Now, flash forward to when Kristen comes back from this date, she goes up to Amanda with shrimp in her hand.
Oh.
And just puts her arm around Amanda and, like, puts the shrimp on the side of Amanda's face while she's hugging.
What?
And is like, oh my god, I love you so much. It's so nice to finally meet you. And Amanda almost dies. Almost dies, one, because someone's putting shrimp in her face. But also because she's just heard this story. And the girl, the first thing the girl does is, like, live up to that.
Oh, man.
Then she goes and orders scallops from the kitchen.
Who does?
Kristen.
Okay. Scallop.
Scallop fingers. And begins to eat them with her, like, just fingers, no fork, no nothing. So she really lives up to her nickname.
Man, sometimes the stereotypes just...
Leading up to the rose ceremony, it's really hard for Matt, because he realizes that he doesn't want to date either of these women.
Okay.
One of them is scallop fingers, and the other one... is the self-proclaimed queen of paradise who...
Oh, Matt. Matt winning at everything.
Who it's become clear to him is losing her mind. So when faced with the option of bad or worse, Matt chooses to quit paradise and go home.
I'm not even going to ask which is which because it really honestly doesn't matter.
I think bad is scallop fingers and worse is Jasmine, but he quits and just goes, yeah, I'm going to leave.
Okay.
Jasmine becomes a tornado of emotion at this point because she realizes there is no chance at her getting a rose, if not Matt's rose, because she's only got about an hour and a half to convince another man to keep her there, and that's not nearly enough time.
Oh, hashtag drama.
Someone in production didn't want to lose the self-proclaimed proclaimed Queen of Paradise. So they did make Matt return long enough to say, I'd like to give you my rose because I think you deserve to stay here, but I'm still going home. And even as he's saying this, you can tell that, like, he was forcibly pushed back into doing this.
This is not an organic, altruistic move on his part.
It makes it very humorous then when Matt and Jasmine are in studio for the fake live after show, and they don't let Matt get in a word edgewise. It's just all about, Jasmine, have you gotten over this? Jasmine, have you accepted that, like, Matt treated you poorly, but, like, you can move past it? And Matt's like, I just want to clarify that, like, I think I did the right thing
here. Excuse me, sir. Yeah. In this court of law, please just answer the question yes or no.
Chris Harrison actually says, when you get past the crazy, you don't go back and ask her more questions.
What?
And that's presented like it's really funny, and Jasmine laughs at it, but I don't know if that's just because they cut in the editing of her laughing. Right. Or like, and then Matt just kind of looks down, and that's how they end that segment.
On a lot of levels, what the fuck?
Yeah. Don't worry about Scallop Fingers, though, because she found Jack Stone and made out with him, so she got a rose, too.
Future porn star Jack Stone!
Jack Stone's excited by this, because...
He hasn't got any action up till now, right?
Exactly. And...
He's got that name and everything.
Yeah. The remaining storylines are only sort of, like... vaguely touched on, which is weird because they were the storylines that dominated prior to this. And those are the two legitimate love triangles. Here's your update on the two legitimate love triangles. Dean is a...
I didn't even know that there were two. I just know they're fake ones.
Dean's still up to the fuckery that Dean's up to.
Deanie baby.
He really likes Christina, and he knows that she's the right choice. But he thinks that D-Lo is really hot. That's an actual quote that he says 3 times over 3 hours.
Okay.
Now, there are a couple problems with that. Problem one, Christina wears a green and white bathing suit in most of the 3 hours that aired this week. And I don't know that I've ever seen a woman look hotter in a bathing suit. So as Dean is like, oh yeah, D-Lo's so hot. I'm like, Dean, do you see Christina on the rocks? She's sitting on the rocks in that bathing suit. Like, Calgon, take me away. What's happening? Two, the uncomfortable undertone and subtext of what Dean is saying is, I've had sex with Christina already, and I haven't had sex with D-Lo. But he's phrasing it in the way that's like, oh, D-Lo's so hot. Which is just like, I haven't seen D-Lo naked yet, but I have seen Christina naked.
Okay.
He continues to placate both of them throughout the first 2 hours. He spends equal time with both of them, which makes Christina very upset and doesn't really seem to make D-Lo upset at all. She's just sort of like, I'm in paradise. This is fun. Whatever. Which is probably because Christina and Dean have slept together, and in her mind, they're in a relationship, and in D-Lo's mind, they're in paradise and they're having fun.
Okay.
Now, I know they slept together because, one, it's been reported on a podcast that Dean is a frequent guest on, and two, because if you leave the show for 10 days and you travel together and you're not on camera...
Oh, is this the Austin couple?
They went to Kentucky and then they went to Chicago. Okay. Like, you're sleeping together. But... it's funny, right? Because I tend to live tweet this. I've scaled back on it since we started doing this because I don't want to, like, waste jokes. I don't want to repeat jokes. But I tweeted out, like, about the sort of uncomfortable nature of the subtext of what Dean is saying. And then maybe 20 minutes later, when Robbie and Christina finally have their conversation that I alluded to earlier, she tells Robbie, like, you know, we slept together last night. As she's watching Dean pick D-Lo up in the pool, spin her around, and make out with her.
Wait. Dean and...
Christina.
Christina.
And Robbie's like, yeah, no, I kind of knew that that had happened last night.
How sketchy.
So it's not like it happened while they were off camera, and then he kind of was just making out with girls and being, like, flirty. It's like, no, he was sleeping in Christina's bed and still having sex with her.
Right.
But... this is the problem, right? This is problem number three. Christina you need to just say no at a certain point. Like, and maybe that point will be next week, but it feels like it's 2 days, like 2 to 3 days too late. She's not willing to just tell Dean, like, it's me or the highway. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, D'Lo can be in this position where she can hang around and wait. It doesn't matter for her.
Right, but she doesn't have the history in the 10-day break.
Yeah, it's still shitty because if they're supposedly friends, D'Lo and Christina, like I said yesterday, that doesn't seem to be...
Oh, right, this was the girl code conversation.
Yeah, it still doesn't get addressed this week. Hmm. And at one point, Christina goes, should I go talk to D'Lo? And Dean goes, oh no, why would you do that? Which should make you go, wait, no, I definitely need to go talk to D'Lo.
Okay.
He's telling them both the same things. He really... All of the goodwill that he built up in his season of Bachelor, like Rachel's season of Bachelorette, and all of the people that he, like, all the naysayers, that, including me, that were like, yeah, you're 25, like, right. How emotionally mature can you be?
He's apparently sort of, not very.
Well, now he's kind of showing it. On the other side of the love triangle thing, it's Adam with Raven and Sarah, and that one is just weirder. It's so much weirder because...
Who's Sarah?
Sarah is the one who appeared last week. She's the teacher who I was a huge fan of in Nick's season who kind of got a bad edit in that they didn't really show her at all.
Where did she come in?
She came in Wednesday of last week?
No, I mean, where did she come in Nick's season?
Oh, like midway. She was like directly at the midway point. So if there's 30 girls, she probably came in, like, 13th, 14th, something like that. She didn't make a lasting impression on almost anyone except me.
Okay.
And perhaps Adam. So this is where we were talking about last week. Raven is like, oh, during the 10-day break, Sarah and I both hung out with Adam.
Oh, is this a spooning story?
Yes. But, like, together. We all hung out together, and then... She elaborates on it further in their fake after the, fake live show this week, saying that they stayed at Adam's apartment, and he let the two girls share his bed, and he agreed to sleep on the couch.
Magnanimous.
But then in the middle of the night, Raven's like, yeah, I woke up, and I was alone in the bed, so I went downstairs, and I saw, like, them entwined on the couch bed.
Hey-o.
But then, last week, when Adam arrived, Sarah wasn't there, so Raven was like, hey, let's go on a date. Because she's like,
it's the guy who's entwined on the couch, yes, with the other person.
Yeah.
That seems like a recipe for disaster.
Well, especially because you have to know that Sarah's coming. Like, it's... You know she's coming because you talked about it during the 10-day break. So, there's that.
10-day break.
More problems with the 10-day break. And then Sarah shows up and also asks Adam on a date. They went on a date last week. So flash forward to this week. Adam doesn't know who to choose. He's very conflicted.
Oh, poor baby.
They're both very good kissers. And they both really want to date him. And I don't think Adam is used to that. I don't think he's used to two very attractive women wanting to date him at the same time.
Okay.
So whereas with Dean, I think it's a lack of emotional maturity. With Adam, I think he just is like...
I don't know what to do with this.
He's like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. He wants to try all of the candies.
Sure.
Because he doesn't know if he'll ever be back there again. They're promising him different things. Raven is promising him far less, which is just that, like, you're nice. I like hanging out.
You're nice. You're kind of hot. Let's do this.
Yeah. And Sarah's like, I have feelings for you. Like, I had feelings for you in Texas, like, that night, and I have feelings for you now. And so, again, it reeks of, like, well, did they sleep together in Texas that night? Like, did Raven walk... What did she walk in on exactly? And I don't know the answer to that question, but Adam juggles them both throughout the entire cocktail ceremony and tells them, like,
as in they both think that they're going to get the rose? Yes. So they think the other's going to get the rose?
They both think they're getting the rose. But actual Queen of Paradise, Raven, gets the rose because...
She's the Queen of Paradise.
Because she's the actual Queen of Paradise. Sarah goes home. And so for two seasons in a row, Sarah gets not what she deserves.
Oh, that sucks.
She gets like a knock. I mean, I think her edit this time around was better because anyone that's watching this that doesn't see that she's just like a lovely human being who probably deserves to have, like, that is ready to be in a committed relationship, is watching a different show than me. But yeah, not great for her.
Oh, poor baby.
And then things happen with Taylor and Derek, but they're the most boring couple on this show. So I don't have a ton to say about.
I don't even know who they are, so.
It's the emotional IQ girl and and the.
Oh, gross. She was terrible.
I mean, she.
And condescending and like, nah.
Yeah, and this has been an image rehab for her, but this week Derek uses a trigger word for her. And apparently she's been emotionally abused in a prior relationship, so she shuts down upon hearing the trigger word.
That sucks.
And then he shuts down because he doesn't know how to deal with her when she shuts down. And then, like, even their fights are boring. Like, they're boring. Like, they fight, and, like, I watched it and was like, I don't care about this. Like, and I also know that you're going to make up in, like, 38 seconds.
Sure.
Which they do, and then she gets his rose, and...
Shocking.
Nothing happens with the other couples. It's like Dominique and Diggy, that's a thing. She gets his rose. I think the only other girl I'm forgetting now is... Well, not forgetting. I'm just saving the worst for last. Lacey's still on this show. And why?
Which one?
The one who just whines about everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, at the fear of losing her, Lacey told the producer she would only come on Paradise under one condition.
Okay.
Is that she wanted to engage in shenanigans with Daniel, the Canadian stallion who...
Does he say, what's going on, eh?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
he's Canadian. Very, very Canadian.
Where in Canada is he from?
I'm not even going to pretend to know that. So...
Yes, you have to pay attention to the important things.
When it becomes clear that she's going to be eliminated at the rose ceremony, they unleash Daniel on Paradise to save her.
Wait... Why wasn't he already on it?
People roll in and out. He had not been rolled in yet.
So wait, who was she flirting with and doing all the things with?
She went on the date with Diggy, and then Diggy very quickly went on the date with Dominique, and they ate those roses. I mean, they ate the strawberries, and Diggy was like, this is better.
Oh, okay. She was shook by Dominique.
Yes. She doesn't understand how this show works. She lectures Diggy this week on how disrespectful it was. And Diggy's like, yeah, I've got the rose. You realize that, right? Like, he's like, I'm not giving it to him. I'm giving it to Dominique. But you really didn't do anything to win me over here.
Oh, boy.
But Daniel comes and does cry. Like, I talk quite a bit about how you can see when a conversation is chopped up. Daniel talks to all the girls, and you can see how the conversation is, like, really chopped up with each of them. But
what's the running theme?
He feels like he's joined Paradise too late this year, and that he's, like, walking into a club at 2 a.m. as all of the girls are stumbling out with broken heels and, like, lost ambition. And there's, like, a joke, it's very clearly meant to be a joke, where he's talking to Lacey and saying, like, I feel like I'm just kind of picking up all these other guys' scraps now. And...
Hey, dude.
But it's not cut like a joke.
No, I wouldn't imagine it would be.
Now, this is where, like, knowing some behind-the-scenes stuff, like, I know that Lacey, and it's very clear, too, but they don't, and this is what makes it weird. So, like, with all the 10-day break stuff, they're like, let's talk about all the 10-day break stuff. Lacey and Daniel hooked up before the show, but not during a 10-day break, just, like, in real life.
Okay.
So the reason that she only wanted to do the show for him was because she wanted to be with him. And so she thought, okay, this is great. We can both, like, activate our fan bases and become, like, a power couple on television. Mm-hmm. And I think Daniel just doesn't really care that much. He's like, oh, yeah, you're a girl I hooked up with a little bit. Like, I don't think he understood how...
He legit somebody I used to know her.
Yeah. And I don't think he understood, like, how excited she was going to be to see him. And she's, like, very clingy, like, very fast.
Ah.
And so he gets a date card, and he's like, yeah, I guess I'll take Lacey on the date. Like, I don't know who else I'm going to take.
She's a whiny one, right?
Yeah, so, like, she's like, yes, this is what I was waiting for, going on dates, this is real love. But then he comes back and...
Oh, that's not what we... Oh,
He comes back and Jasmine's like, hey, you want to hang out? And Daniel's like, yeah, I'll hang out with you. Like, because that's where he's at, you know? Like, he's not there to find his wife, necessarily. He's more, like, there to kind of date around and be on television. So Lacey has more things to whine about.
Okay.
The... episode leaves us to question what's going to happen next with Christina and Dean. And if it's anything other than Christina just leaves, I don't really know what we're waiting for here. Like, I love Christina. This is like a recurring theme. But girl, you gotta go. You gotta go home. Like, you gotta go home, or you gotta find somebody else and make out with them. Okay. Like, just
wait. Who's she hung up on?
Dean.
Oh, but she's the one who was very staunchly Dean, even though he was not.
She was the one who believed they were in a relationship.
Yeah, and he went off with somebody else. Yeah. And all that jazz.
And so we leave on that like kind of a cliffhanger, and the scenes, the climactic and dramatic scenes from next week show Christina and Raven fighting. And I hope it's Raven being like, hi, I'm the actual queen of paradise, and I just want to like let you know that you're being clowned right now.
The queen welcomes you to paradise.
Stop being clowned. But that's not really how the trailer made it look. It made it look more like they were fighting about... less about like, oh, you need to wake up and see what's happening, and more like, just go home if you don't want to be here. And, like, it's weird to say to somebody, like, go home if you want to be here, if the reason they don't want to be there is they're being cheated on. Like, that's, like, a...
yeah, it's pretty
tough. It's not wrong. Like, you probably should go home. But, like, maybe don't yell that at them. Maybe, like, hey, like, if you're getting clowned on national television, it's probably good to get out of here.
Hey. Have some self-respect. Yeah. Salvage the situation. Go out to the real world. Start your campaign of how you were wronged. And come out on top of that situation.
Exactly. So I'll be curious to see. They also preview heavily the twins. I love all things the twins, but...
I'm aware.
Still don't really buy
them. Okay, wait. The twins or Raven?
I mean, well, that's... it's a weird question because it's like a two-for-one deal.
You know, twins or Raven?
No,
twins. Death is not an option.
It's twins. I would take either of the twins individually as well over Raven.
Okay, twins or... not Caitlin. What's...
Kayla. Probably Kayla, because, but this is me being naive in some ways. Like, the twins are very open about the fact that they don't really want to date anyone from this, like, Bachelor franchise. And...
hey, me either.
And I don't really think that on paper I'm either one of their type, because I've seen the guys that they actually do date. But, like, with Kayla, I feel like the eternal optimist in me. I still feel like there's a real potentiality there, you know? Just because I'll go back to forever and ever her describing her ideal partner, where she's like, I want to be like moss growing on a tree. And I feel like the tree grows and the moss grows and they're really united in one. And like, I'll be that tree. Like, I'll be your tree, Kayla. Like, I'm ready for that.
Wes, be a person, not a tree.
I mean, I want to be like one of those like anthropomorphic trees, like with a face, you know?
You're going to be a weirwood?
Sure.
You're going to let Bran warg into you and see all the important shit that happened around you?
If I also have moss growing on me that's like Kayla, then sure.
If the moss is Kayla.
But, yeah, so that was this week in Paradise. We're running kind of long, so my brief update on who's going to be the Bachelor is I have no idea who's going to be the Bachelor. Like... more and more, it seems like no one wants to be the Bachelor. So, I'm ready. If, like, they want to call me, I will gladly be the Bachelor.
Oh, man.
Because people are turning this down right and left. I heard this week that Eric turned it down, Kenny passed on it, Wells reiterated on another podcast that he doesn't want to be the Bachelor, Ben Higgins went on his own podcast and said no, in no uncertain terms am I ready to be the Bachelor again, emotionally or physically.
Can I just say, this is the only time I volunteer to be the Bachelor.
I mean, I feel like I have a slightly better chance than you, but also that's like a fait accompli. Like, neither of us really stand this chance. Like, Dean blew his shot, really, because, like, there's, I don't know.
Dean, it was for yours for the taking.
I don't know how you come back from this edit. So... I mean, they better hope they figure out how to get Peter to do this, because if you don't get Peter, I don't know who the hell is going to be the Bachelor. I mean, I'd be excited to find out who that would be, but, like, it seems like the Tickle Monster's available, so maybe, like...
Whoa. That was uncalled for.
He does show up tonight. I forgot that, so I just wanted to circle back and let people know that the Tickle Monster is in Paradise now, and he's a doctor, and... And he's really embracing his brand to the degree that every sentence he says involves the word tickle now.
Honey, no.
So, seems like there'll be more drama with them next week, and we'll be back to recap it all. We may, God willing, in the creek don't rise, have a special guest as well. So that will be exciting. I'll finally have achieved the first special guest that I've been trying to get on this podcast. Until then, you can follow me.
As the only member of the Creek tribe on this thing, I will rise.
Until then, you can follow me on Twitter. It's still I am Wesley.
And it's still Weeksa. You can send us emails, especially if you want our sponsorship.
Yes.
We're really good at integrating these ads seamlessly into our podcast.
Whatthefash@gmail.com. Our intro is Wes.
Biking in the Park by Lee Rose Fair.
Yep. And our outro.
Already There by Josh Woodward.
Josh, you got it.
There it is. Yes. It only took 14 weeks.
And you caring.
Yeah, there's nothing until January.